and welcome to another God is a Geek podcast. I'm your man Chris White. Joining me this week are Mr. Gary Bailey. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Good stuff. Mr. Dan Murphy, how are
you,
mate?
You've carped me, Christopher. You've carped me. Am I too hot though? It's too hot.
I've got a nice bottle of apple and raspberry flavoured still water.
Oh shit, I didn't get water before this podcast. I could die on the microphone from dehydration, sunstroke, exhaustion, a whole number of things. And how filling would that be to our lovely listeners? Death live on air. You can't get more real time than that, really. I suppose you could, because it could be a live stream, but
visuals, yeah, great.
Quite tired, Chris.
So yeah, what have you been up to then, mate? Because you've been in the sun all day.
Because as an attempted internship, a rival video game company failed and left me in a rather bit of a rut. I've had to fucking get a proper job, which means I'm up at 5 a.m. the past 2 days, and I've only been in the job 2 days, and it's going to take some getting used to getting up at 5 in the morning. Bet. Fucking deadness. And I work for a park, this is so thrilling, a company that parks cars for airport hotels, and it's my job to sort out keys, do administrative work, and then go out into the scorching sun and film said cars which have been delivered to make sure that if there's any damage on them, that it's proof that it had already happened before it was in our care.
Right, okay.
I've got such a mad tan. It's pretty good in some places, but I am like roasting.
I'll bet. Do you get many issues? We get customers.
I don't really get customers. Oh, I was getting some mad stories today. I don't really know how much I can share them, but all my days.
That's all right, mate.
Put it this way, right? Boss was telling me today how they had a guy who came. He was complaining that the car had been dented, so we went down to like talk to him. He went, "Oh, show me this dent then." And he went, "Oh, you can't see it." And the guy went, "Why? Why can't you see it if there's a dent? How do you know it's there?" He went, "Oh, the car has an aura. As I was walking towards it, it told me it had been dented." And if it was coming from anyone else, I don't think I'd believe it, but I don't think this guy would lie. And it was quite bewildering, I must say.
Blimey hell, yeah, that's a bit crazy.
Nutters in this world.
Yeah. Gary, what have you been up to?
Not much, to be honest. Just working myself today, luckily in a place that was air-conditioned.
Lucky bastard. Lucky. You should see the state of the office I work in. It's literally inside of like a container, like a shipping container. Oh, Christ alive.
Oh, man.
Christ alive. It is not.
Well, I'm kind of glad that E3 hasn't happened this weekend, because covering that stuck on a podcast a few hours in this heat, and even writing in this, I know that's like a really petty thing to say, but writing in this is just bad enough because you sat the hot computer on your lap or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's been a while since E3, a few days now. Reflection-wise, are we still, how are we feeling about it? I mean, we obviously talked in depth about the games, but just like in general, are we as a general consensus, it wasn't one of the best E3s.
It was fine. It was just fine. It was fine. There's some good stuff. There was a lot of alright stuff. There wasn't the killer thing was that there was not many big surprises. Like Sony and Microsoft didn't have any bombshells. Only Ubisoft did, and that could only and that bombshell specifically only reflect only matters to a certain few people. I know the story of actual Beyond Good and Evil 2, which fucking was revealed and then not revealed. But like, I have no idea what the actual first game is. I've never seen it before in my life, so I'd imagine a lot of people are in the same boat. So. Well, it was great for a lot of people, no doubt. I just feel like it is the one bombshell they had is kind of one that I don't think appealed en masse, shall we say?
Yeah.
But it was fine.
Gary.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of still thinking it was a good show. There was plenty of good stuff, but I'm still of the mind of not enough of it was new. There was some good stuff in Ubisoft, Microsoft. Those two especially, I think. Sony, again, it was all stuff that we'd already seen. As great as it actually looks. Apparently people really, really don't like it when you say that the Sony show wasn't that good, which I've discovered.
I've noticed. It's silly, really.
It's daft. But
one of the things I was going to talk about with Nick, because Nick was going to be on, but she's not, unfortunately. But I wanted her opinion on the Minecraft thing. I can't possibly imagine
why you'd want Nicola's opinion on that matter, Chris. It's almost if you're wanting an explosion on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. But, man, yeah. But we'll leave that for another day.
I'm a bit worried about Skull and Bones, Chris, because I am scared that it's literally just going to be For Honor on the seas. I'm worried that it's going to have a shit single player that's just training for multiplayer and you don't leave the ship. I'm scared that I'm finally, after all these years, going to get so close to what I wanted, but not actually get it, and it's going to be a tough one. Hopefully, I do just reveal the multiplayer of the game, or the, you know, the fucking dynamic, persistent world bullshit, and we actually do get some stuff where you get to customize your own pirate captain, your crew, you get to do, I don't know, fucking raids and battles and kind of loads of sword fights and shit, and I can only hope we do, because I'm a little bit worried that we're not going to see.
No, I think the initial trailer was great because it brought back some of the best bits from some of the best things from Black Flag. But I don't think there's going to be much more. I don't think there's going to be a single player running through it or anything like that.
Especially worrying when For Honor's fucking player base has dropped about 95% from launch, which is fucking madness.
There's not enough there to keep people interested with For Honor. And as good, as much fun as it kind of can be, it does get old quite quick. Mm-hmm. But there was still a lot of cool stuff out there. I don't know whether as gamers we're being kind of greedy by saying things like, "Oh, there wasn't enough new stuff," and I'm one of those as well.
I reckon there was a lot of good stuff on the floor.
Yeah, there was tons of stuff, and I'd love to have gotten my hands on. Yeah, I like getting my hands on some of those games to play them because there was a lot to play there. I mean, if you've been paying attention to the site over the last few days, there's been a hell of a lot of previews gone up by someone who's covering it for us in America. There's Assassin's Creed previews, there's an interview
that mini sounded for a good way out. That sounded really interesting.
It did. That was from the Devolver conference. There was some good games come out of that. Yeah, there's a game called The Swords of Ditto as well, which sounds really cool.
Yeah, that got announced before, I think.
Because I never heard anything about it until I read the preview, and it just sounds really cool that the fact that it's like when you die, it's like takes place another few decades or 100 years later, and your legend is like lore now, and it just sounds really clever, and it looks really cool too, like a kind of top down old school Legend of Zelda kind of game. So yeah, there's some cool little things come out of it, but in terms of what we're playing now, there's not loads, but there's some pretty decent games, especially from Housemarque. Dan, you've been playing and reviewing Nex Machina.
New Machina, I believe it's called, yeah?
Yeah.
No. Nex Machina, yeah. Nex Machina. It's fucking ace, man. It's so, so good. It's up there. And it's not better than Zelda, let's be honest. But, I mean, it could be my second favourite game of the year, potentially.
Really?
Possibly, maybe. It's so good. I mean, Housemarque are just the absolute fucking dons of shoot 'em ups. They are the absolute. I've just discovered there's a SteamWorld Dig 2, and that is sick. I have no idea. Sorry about this little tangent. I'm just going through the features on the site now. That's sick. It's so good. It's basically a Resogun top down rather than having like the circle arena that Resogun had. So you are like this little soldier dude who zips around, twin stick shooting. Probably should have mentioned that in the review. I can't believe I didn't say that in the review. It must be pretty obvious. And you have to run around saving little green humans from the horde of glowing red alien monsters that are invading. And instead of it being in space, it's on like these really nicely designed, really colourful, really pretty worlds. I think there's a forest, there's a mine or a mountain, maybe like a ice mountain, and then a fire mine, I think. And I imagine the problem is I'm not good at these games, but I really like them. And I think what I mentioned in the review is that you don't really need to be good at Nex Machina to like it, or at least not at first, because it's so good at kind of teaching you. Now, it doesn't hold your hand, and it is difficult when you go into harder difficulties. But the difficulty curve is so kind of, it's just such a smooth line that, you know, and each bit, like, you're learning you feel like you're improving every run through. You feel like you're learning the maps, learning the enemies,
yeah.
learning how they attack, learning the secrets in the world. And there's so much packed into these levels. There's secret humans to find and collect. There's secret levels you can find if you find a door to them. There's like bonus enemies you have to kill to get more points and visitors to destroy. There's so much in here, but I just think, like I said, I'm not particularly good at games, and I enjoyed my brief stay in the top 100 of the leaderboards. I can only say that. But like I said, you don't need to be good because it's just so kind of organic and how you learn, how you improve, and it's just really fucking fun. It's so intense how the the music's really good. It helps like kind of build into this like heroic vibe, and it's just smooth as fucking shit, mate. It's so good.
Yeah, I mean, I played a very small amount of it, but the bit I did, the gameplay is so just fluent. Like, you just you're moving around these maps, and they it's like, I don't know, it's weird how to explain why you go from one to the next. It's like a cube, and you go from one face to another face.
Yeah, that's obviously it. Yeah, that's right. It's like you don't really control it. It just zooms you there, and it's kind of fucking disorientating at times.
Yeah, it is. But you get bonuses for not dying, and there are like little green men you've got to try and save, and amongst all this chaos that's coming off. And yeah, there's these red monstered alien things. There's so many different types. There's ones that shoot like blobs of these energy orbs at you, and there's ones that fire spikes, there's ones that spin around, and then there's just like hordes of like 10 or 15 that just spawn, you know, every few seconds, and you're dodging and you're trying to, I don't know how you do it, you like suddenly enter the Matrix and you're like Neo and you're just like dodging them all with like precision, and you just kind of get it, don't you?
I didn't mention this in my review, but what actually reminded me of a little bit was kind of Luftrausers and how you'd be surrounded and then you just maneuver somehow, you get away, and it's not it's obviously controls very differently, and Ex Machina, you're moving all the time. If you don't move, you stay still, and like Luftrausers is where the point was, you let go to kind of maneuver a bit, whereas this is this is a kind of classic top down kind of twin stick and how it controls, but it's like so fluent, and the way you can just like boost through enemies, and like you can have different power ups with like swords and lasers and rocket launchers and stuff. I mean, everything about it is just so kind of fluid, and it's just responsive, and like the most finest movement happens as you see it. You're like at one with the controller, and that kind of even if you die, it's always your fault. Like, you weren't looking. You just got, you did your route wrong. You ran into a fucking laser, which I do all the time on one of the, I think the second to last mission or third to last mission on the first world, when you start right next to a fucking moving laser. Every time, oh shit! It's banging. It's so good, so good. And I can imagine it's just such a good game that I can just chill in for 10 minutes, kind of have a practice run, and just chill out, be at one with the synth.
I think it'd be good to, hopefully, like later down the line, they do announce multiplayer, because you mentioned that as well.
Yeah, that was like, the only local co-op at downside. The minute. Like, the co-op's all in local. I'd really like to play it. I don't have anyone to play with me here. I don't have even a second controller, so I don't even have PS Plus, to be honest with you, so I couldn't play online anyway.
Yeah.
But online co-op, I'd really like to see how it kind of translates to being with two people, and I'm sure that would be interesting.
Yeah, Gary, have you ever heard of this
game? But...
Because I had no idea until
neither
the review code came in.
Neither did I.
Because I'm fairly sure there's another game House Mark are working on that was previewed. I can't remember. We've got like the preview written. I think it was Mindfall. I think that was the name of it. But that's when...
Matterfall.
Yeah. And I when he said a new Housemark game, I just assumed it was that. But then I thought, well, that's not out yet. But I had no idea about this. And I'd like... It's quite amazing. I mean, what... Do you think you'd be playing it?
Probably. I mean, to be fair, I've not even played Resogun or Alienation. So it's one that, like, maybe at some point... I've got Resogun when it was... free on PS Plus years ago now, I think it was.
Actually the first PS Plus game on PS4.
But again, just never even got around to playing it, and the number of games that keep building up, I'm not sure when I'll ever get to play it.
Oh no. I know we say this about a lot of games, but it's perfect for like the PS Plus, if you do have PS Plus. Like Alienation was there recently, so.
Yeah.
You know, it would be certainly worth getting to play, even in the sale. I think if they had multiplayer, it'll be a lot more appealing because you have play with your mates who you don't necessarily live near you or whatever. So it's certainly one to keep an eye on. Excuse me. But yeah, Gary, I want to talk about Crossout.
Yep.
Because I've been very close to getting it. And the concept to me sounds quite cool. But I mean, the review is quite mixed. So I'll leave you to talk a bit more about it. But, you know, what's it like?
It's an odd one. I think I said in my review, it's kind of like a cross between Battlefield and Twisted Metal.
Yes.
Because it's an online shooter, but it's all vehicle based. But the kind of the bonus to it is you build your own vehicles. By destroying enemies and by completing objectives and stuff like that, you get pieces for putting onto your car. You can then share those with others online. Some of the stuff that people have built is ridiculous. You know, some of it just wouldn't work. Like one of them, I think I saw an F1 car, which someone had made. Didn't put any guns on it or anything, so it wouldn't have lasted 30 seconds, but it was just like that was the sort of thinking behind what people were making. People made tanks and everything. It's great, but
yeah,
its main issue is there's just not that much depth to it because the maps all look pretty much the same, and there's not that many of them, so you quickly kind of get bored of looking at the same thing. There's a lot of fun in it. There is kind of like a co-op element to it as well with the raids. So that's like four players against the AI, and it's mainly just objectives. Like the defense ones are protect these, I think like oil, I forget what they're called, like oil refineries kind of things. And there's like several of them around the map, and once you've defended one, it's then like, go defend this one and another wave will come. I think that was my favourite part because it was just, there was a bit more like active co-op to it. So in like the team-based stuff where you're just fighting other players, unless you're playing with people you know or something like that, you're just going to be stuck with randoms and they won't cooperate at all. Or you might get lucky, you know, now and again you'll get a decent team, but so often you just find yourself, you're on your own because like teams have just split up completely rather than staying together. And you always tell when you're playing against a team of people who are like friends or something, because you just get decimated because your team's all fucking off somewhere, whereas you're just, you're on your own and you've got like three or four of them just zoning in on you. You've got no chance. Not as good as it could have been.
Do you reckon there's room for it to expand and with like additional DLC? Do you think they'll look at doing that?
I hope so, because I mean there's a lot of potential in it. The actual core gameplay is a lot of fun, and if you just had a few more maps, maybe another game mode or something like that, I think there might be a little bit, there's an extra level there where more people could get into it. I mean, I will say one thing for it, you weren't waiting around for games. You know, you're jumping in like straight away. As soon as you select, start or look for game.
Yeah.
You're talking like less than 10 seconds and you're into a game.
That's really good. Yeah. Because the shows that there's clearly people that want to play this, and there's a lot of people online at any given time.
Yep, that's it. And the fact that you're just not waiting, it means that you're constantly playing. You know, you don't get too bored waiting around. But I think if they do add a few extra maps, another game mode, maybe just tighten up like the tutorials, like menus and stuff are confusing. The actual building side of it, it's good, but you need to be told a bit more, because I was just kind of, it was just trial and error, sticking stuff on and seeing if it worked. But there is a player base, so I think in the future it could be a sound investment.
Yeah, cool. Right, well, I've been playing a game, and I wasn't going to talk about it because of the embargo, but I'm going to put this up tomorrow at 2, which is when the embargo is. Get Even from the Farm 51, published by Bandai Namco. Have you heard of this game? Like, do you know what the basic premise is, anyone?
I've heard of it, but I don't really know much about it other than the delay. Obviously.
Yeah,
I do not know a thing, so lay it on me.
Cool. Now, I knew a little bit, but it got delayed, obviously, last month because of what happened in Manchester. I completely see why. From the opening scene revolves around a woman with a bomb strapped to her chest. So yeah, you kind of get it. But that is such a small part of this game, and quite honestly, it's one of the most kind of unique games I've seen, or one of the games that really kind of harnesses everything about the first person style I've seen in a game for a long time. Like, your basic premise is you're a guy called Cole Black, and you wake up in an asylum, and you've got no idea why you're there. Now, it starts to sound, oh yeah, an asylum, here we go, like lots, but it's so smart. Like, you wake up in an asylum, you don't know why you're there, and this voiceover comes on, like some of the, there's like TV screens littered around the asylum, of a guy called, just simply referred to as Red, and he's basically guiding you through this asylum, and you've got this headset on, and it basically it's called the Pandora, and there are certain points in the game where you're walking around the asylum, and then this Pandora will get triggered for you to relive a memory from your past, and you end up finding out quite a bit about who you are and why you're in the asylum and what you've got to do, what like your path is with this girl who was, you know, in the beginning. And it kind of incorporates so many different, like, you've got your survival horror elements to it, where you're in this asylum and there's like inmates in there and they're running around, and that, you know, there's not a lot of them and you don't know where they are or when they're going to be around, but you'll start to hear some really weird things, like you'll hear them singing or chanting, or they'll just run out at you, and it's quite terrifying. So you're on edge for quite a bit. Then there's other elements where you've got a gun, and it's a gun called the Corner Gun, and that's kind of quite integral to the story. And it's exactly what it says. You know, it's a gun that can shoot around corners. And you find out what that's got to do with it. But in those moments, there's like first-person shooters, so you run around shooting guards, and that kind of thing. And then there's like a first-person narrative game. So there's like your Gone Homes and your Edith Finches, where you look around certain scenes through this Pandora where it transfers you to certain things, and you look around something, and then by press that, interacting with an object, it opens up this memory that you get to watch unfold, and there's a huge story to it. But it brings it all together really well, and when it kind of reaches a point where you think that's it, then it isn't. It kind of carries on even further from a different kind of, from something else. I don't want to say, but it's just so kind of smart, and it incorporates a lot together. There are a few downsides to it. There's a lot of text that you read as you go throughout all the settings, and there's loads of kind of like emails and newspaper clippings, all that kind of things. There's a lot of things you have to scan. And by doing so, the different kind of, where the clippings are, it's like from different scenes. So each scene, if you unlock all of the kind of evidence, you get rewarded for it. And I don't want to say how too much.
Right.
But so you get rewarded a lot for reading a lot. And it doesn't take the fun out of it, because some of it is quite interesting. But when you're playing a first-person shooter and you're reading whilst you're doing that, it does take the shine off, and that, yeah, as I say, there's a lot. And then even later on in the game, there's a hell of a lot to do with the concepts that you play, like the concepts of the headset, and why does it do what it does, where did that come from, who created it. Then it talks about memory in general, and there's a lot of scientific documents and theses, and there's just a hell of a lot there. But it's still, it kind of, if you're willing to read all that and you're willing to play through the whole game, it's certainly worth it. So, I mean, even if you're not great with horror, which I know, Dan, you're not, there's still, it's not outright horror. There's not like horror elements to it, but it is freaky. So there are.
I feel like I need to see it in person.
Yeah.
Because like I'm seeing so many different images of it. I've just Google imaged it. I'm seeing Google images of kind of Spec Ops the line, like army guys, and now I'm seeing a fucking guy on his mobile phone while there's a big fucking scary dude with like a tire iron ready to batter his head in. Creepy kind of Outlast-esque camera stuff. Some guy looking like an assassin. I mean, there's a lot going on from this weird woman with horns sticking over her. So seems to be like a lot going on here. There is beyond me.
But it does bring it together really well. And one of your, I mean, you do. There are scenes where you have got a gun, and even in the scenes when you're not carrying around the corner gun, you've got a pistol like in the asylum. But one of your main tools is just a phone, and it's got different kind of features. You can use the UV light on it, so that'll help you look for certain footsteps or fingerprints. There's infrared, so you can scan, see where enemies are in the distance, or, you know, there's certain pipes that you have to follow and wires that you follow to kind of turn the electric back on. That you could use your infrared for that. It's got a map on there, so you can obviously you look for any enemies on there, or there's certain things in the memory, because obviously the memory sequence is where you can manipulate, so you can create like a wall that wasn't there before, and you could do that all through the map. And you get text messages every now and again from weird horrible text messages, which are pretty grim. You don't know who the people are. It just, I don't know, it sounds like there's a lot going on, and there is, but I just feel it does a really good job of kind of bringing it together. So
what you're describing, it's making me think of like Condemned. Like a bit of that around. Obviously, there's other features to it, but I'm just getting a little bit of a Condemned vibe from it, which intrigues me, because that was that's an underrated game, or at least a forgotten game.
Yeah, well, Greg Grunberg is the voiceover legend. it is. You kind of are being a detective, even though you're a former mercenary. You are using your surroundings and using clues, and there's a massive kind of focus on your environment and checking everywhere and looking everywhere and scanning everything. And you know, it's just a really smart game, and I was quite surprised, but I wasn't expecting it to be quite as good. And as I say, it's not going to be for everyone, because it could get a little tiring, because there is a hell of a lot, and the further you go, the more you feel like you're reading, and you know, it can weigh you down a bit, but the story is really good. So I'd definitely, I'd definitely suggest it to our listeners.
Interesting.
I like to talk about a bit of Morrowind, Gaz.
Yes.
Because it's been time since I played it. I can't even remember when it. When did it come out? Like the original.
Oh, I looked it up the other day. It's 17 years, I think it is. 17 years.
17 years. Wow. Well.
Yeah.
That made me feel old.
I was quite surprised by that.
Yeah. Bloody hell. I mean, it's not Morrowind the game. It's an expansion for the Elder Scrolls Online.
Yeah.
So, one of the first things I want to do before you kind of talk a bit more about it is, do you feel like you really need to play the original to level up to get to this point, or are you quite free to just walk into Morrowind as a noob?
No, you can just start right from the beginning. That's a nice surprise for an MMO, because usually it's a case of expansions come out, you've got to be, like, you've basically got to be the level cap to go to it. But it's partly because of the One Tamriel, I think it was called, did with one of the recent updates. And it basically means that essentially the whole game is accessible from the start, whether you go into Morrowind or you go play the base game. You just jump straight into Morrowind, and it actually has its own story. Because I started a new character which I'll go into in a minute because it's an actual new new class as well.
Okay.
But yeah, start a new character. You start off in a ship, I think it was, and you're basically you're a prisoner. You get freed, and eventually you end up sort of on the island of Vardenfell. And like, if you want, you can get a boat and go back to the mainland, and then from there's a clever little way to get you into the original story as well, if you want to go back and then play sort of the Elder Scrolls Online base story. But yeah, great. I've really enjoyed it so far, and you get the same tutorials as well as you play Morrowind.
Okay,
so
cool.
You know, you are introduced to how to play the game.
Do you find, because it's been out for a long time, Elder Scrolls Online, do you find, like, when, obviously, this is your first time playing Elder Scrolls Online, is it?
No, I did play a bit of it on the PS4 originally.
So do you find a lot of the players playing Morrowind are new, like, level, same kind of level as you? Because I'm just interested to know, are they pushing for this Morrowind to try and bring more players in that haven't kind of touched it? Because I've got no idea about the player base. I'm just wondering if a lot of people that you're playing with or were online at the same time were kind of similar level.
They do seem to be a lot of similar level ones, but I don't know whether that's just people starting, like, the new Warden class, and, you know, starting again, or whether it is actual new players. But there are there's still a lot of players on there, and there are a few, like, high level ones running around, which I've noticed. But I mean, to be fair, I mean, I think on a whole, I've seen more lower level than I have the higher level. So whether that is, I mean, it's bringing a lot more players, I don't know. I suspect there are a few, because I mean, Morrowind is, I mean, it's a classic, in it. So many people love that game. Yeah. I personally couldn't get into it. It was only when Oblivion came out that I really got into the Elder Scrolls stuff. But I think because of how big it is, people have gone, Morrowind, what are you talking about? Give me more Morrowind. So they've just gone and picked it up and got into it. And I think, to be fair, the combat style in the Elder Scrolls Online isn't that dissimilar to the original Morrowind in some respects, so I think it might help those players come across quite easily.
I mean, it's been interesting to see what they do with it and how long they kind of continue to, what Bethesda thinking, like, how long are they going to be doing this for, and where else are they going to go? And they're going to create new parts of, well, not create new parts, but bring more parts of Tamriel to it, like Elder Scrolls Online. Could you visit everywhere you could do before? I know it's set some, like, hundreds of years before the events of these games, but
I think, like, the majority of it is
Obviously, it's... Go on, mate.
I think the majority of it is there. Cause, I mean, like, when you start the main story, you're in Skyrim, and you can go to the Imperial City that was in Oblivion. I don't know much about, I think it was Arena and Daggerfall, the other two. I've never played them, so I don't really know exactly, like, too much about them. But I imagine that either they're in there or they could be potential expansions for the future.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of legs to it, and it's got a good single-player side to it as well, unlike the majority of MMOs. So I think that's where it could push a little bit further out.
Yeah, cool. So yeah, let's just see how it goes, I guess.
Yeah.
Right, chaps. Games-wise, like, reviews-wise, that kind of thing, there's not really a lot left to kind of talk about. So
I reviewed two shit games, but they were shit and not awesome. In fact, I don't think I've reviewed the other one yet, because it's just so shit I can't be arsed. But, Randall, fucking boring.
So there you go. Don't play Randall, according to Mr. Murphy. It's almost halfway through the year, a week and a bit left. So, in retrospect, what are your top three games of the year so far? So we'll start with you, Dan. I've got a feeling I'm going to know one of them. But, I would say Zelda would probably be up there.
Zelda is numero uno, without a shadow.
Okay.
I think I'm going to go back to it soon. I've kind of, when I went back home after Easter, when I went back to uni after Easter, I kind of fell off it a little bit, apart from one little second. I think, I don't know, I was busy with uni and I kind of fell off it a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's, I've got so much left to play of it, and that excites me so much, because I've still got like half, no, not probably about a quarter, a third perhaps, of the map left to see. And yeah. I mean, it's just, it makes me giddy thinking about it. It's so good. It's just so inventive, so funny, so imaginative, so beautiful, and so kind of, I think kind of more personally, so kind of revolutionary for open world games. I think it's, I think we've seen it already, but I reckon in a year's time, the effects that Horizon will have had on other open world games will be quite clear to see. So that's definitely number one. I did say Zelda, and I didn't say Horizon.
No.
It's because I've just got my 2017's best things up, and the games I have on it, it's not been updated for a while because I'm not playing anything. Nier, Horizon, Zelda, Persona 5, Yakuza. And out of them, I think, I think Next Machina is my second favourite game of the year so far. Maybe that's biased because I've recently just played it and I've not, you know, kind of fallen off of stuff.
Yeah.
But that's definitely just so good. I think kind of, like, House of Mags are the absolute kings of that genre. They're absolute top of their powers. No one does it better. And that, I don't know how that game could be any more just right. Everything is absolutely spot on. And it's just so much fun to play. So maybe it's a little bit of like recency bias. But regardless, I'm going to go with that. A third, Persona 5. I'm still only two bosses in. And I'm hoping to get back into that a bit over the summer. But it's, again, it's really good. I think there's a little, definitely bits that annoy me about it, like how the cat fucking tells you to the bed all the time, like, piss off. How every adult in the world is an absolute knobhead for no reason. I've not really clicked with the characters as much as I did with Persona 4, but it's still a cracking game. The battle system is perhaps the best I've played of turn-based battle systems. Really, really fun and kind of quite active for a turn-based battle system as well, quite involving.
Yeah.
And it just looks fucking, like, the art style is definitely, it's so zany and poppy and
it's cool.
Vibrant, definitely kind of the best art style, I think.
Yeah,
kind
definitely.
Of just with menus and graphics and whatnot.
So you're going Zelda, Next Machina, and Persona?
I believe so, yes.
Not a bad choice, mate, not a bad choice. Gary, are your cogs frantically working in your head to try and remember what you've played this year, or have you got a solid three in your head?
There's a little bit of that going on. The hamster was running in the wheel.
I thought I'd get you on your toes, mate. I thought I'd put your think on live on air.
Instantly, my number one so far is still Resident Evil. Resident Evil 7, just...
God, man, that was this year, wasn't it? I forgot about that completely.
But that one, I mean, it blew me away. I mean, a lot of people I know, they didn't like kind of like the third act, or they thought it went tailed off a bit. But yeah, I loved it from start to finish.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting on the DLC, because you've got the paid for one and the free one that's coming.
Yeah.
I need to know more. I need to see more.
There's no mention of that E3, which was surprising.
Yeah.
You'd think you might see a bit more of the DLC.
I thought there might have been something, but I'm guessing because they delayed the free one, didn't they? So whether it's just a case of we're just going to get our heads down and
leave it at that, I don't know.
Second, Injustice 2. Absolutely.
Oh, Gary, I keep forgetting about these games. that's a good point, man. That's a good choice.
Yeah, I mean, that has to... It very nearly went to number one, but I think Resident Evil is just that bit too good for me. Third, I'm not... I think I might have to go with Dirt 4.
It's cool.
I wasn't sure what to make of that. Like before I reviewed it, I wasn't sure if it was going to be that great, because Dirt Rally was good, but it was a bit too hardcore. So I couldn't really get into it, but I went into Dirt 4 and I've just loved it. I'm still playing it now, even though obviously I've like finished reviewing it. I'm still going back and playing more, and I think that's going to keep going for a while. I think that's probably the three I'd go with.
So Injustice 2, Resident Evil, Dirt 4.
Yeah, those three definitely. Yep.
Yeah, good choice, man. See, I'd forgotten about Injustice, but I'd kind of got them in my head, which I was going to have. But now you've just...
The spanner has been thrown into the works.
Yeah, thanks for that, mate.
Ah, you're welcome.
I think if I have... No, I'm going to stick with my original three. So Horizon's definitely going to be probably first for me. I got that and just hammered it and fell in love with it in every way, visually, mechanically. I really got on with that gameplay. I know you weren't a fan of it, but I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the challenge of bringing down a range of the different kind of animal, hybrid, robot, dinosaur things.
Yeah.
There was just a hell of a range of them, and I just really enjoyed that side of it. I really liked the story. I think Aloy's a very interesting character, and I just really connected with it. So I think Horizon's probably one. I think Nier Automata.
Nier was very close for mine.
Yeah.
Like, it was going to be Nier if Nex Machina didn't start out of nowhere and I kind of clicked with Nex Machina more. Nier, to be honest, Nier and Persona are neck and neck for me. Nier is really good. I still need to kind of finish it more. The only problem is I have with Nier, and I have it as well with Persona, to be fair, the fucking maps in Japanese games are so stupid. Like, I don't get them. Like, it's like Danganronpa has the same stuff. All proper, like, Japanese, like, JRPGs and kind of all those type of games. The maps just don't... They're just not right. I don't know. I can't remember how it is. Like, they're just opposite and weird, and they always mess me up, and I get lost quite easily.
I kind of know what you mean. It's like playing, like, Musou games, like Dynasty Warriors as well. The maps... When you're moving around the maps, you go one way, but you think you're going one way, and you go the other way. It's kind of hard. It's kind of disorientating a little bit. But yeah, I kind of get what you mean there. But in terms of 2B is just an amazing character, and I think the story was just crazy, but it worked so well, and there's like certain scenes in it which just blow you away, like the scene in the fairground with that boss, the spinning. Yep. I don't even know what she is, but
across the actual fairground and seeing all the robots who weren't bastards kind of took me aback. It was one of the most stunning things I've ever seen in games. Stunning as in the literal sense, as it stunned me. I just couldn't. It just came so out of left field, so weird and kind of happy in this world that is so bleak and fucking dire and grim.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you what I love as well. I love the fucking kind of. The trainer ninja guy on the top of that roof in the city centre.
Yeah.
Such a funny geezer.
Yeah, man. That was awesome. I like the bit where you're running through the city and you get that thing on your comms about those massive, like, giant robots.
Mm.
And you have to get on top of the building to try and take him down. It's just... It's so grand.
I'm going to get back into that as well.
Massive.
So much to play.
Yeah.
So little time.
It's so cool.
I might actually play this at some point.
Definitely.
Have you not played it?
No.
Oh, dude. Oh, Gary.
I'm going to have to check it out at some point. Everyone says how good it is. I think it's one I'm going to have to play.
I think Nick's got the disc at the minute, so once he's finished streaming, I'll suggest handing him for that.
Cool.
Because it's certainly worth a go, mate. Third, I think it's going to be What Remains of Edith Finch, I love that kind of, that genre of game is one of my favourite, and I really connected with the story and the concept of it, how, you know, death, it's not, I don't want to go too dark here, but it's not the end, if you know what I mean. There's the kind of stories that of the people live on, and you kind of, you will always have them with you, so it always kind of gives you comfort. And the way they incorporated all the different people in this family, and how... They all assume there was a curse on the family because everyone in the family died. It just does it really well, and like everybody's different, and everyone's death, you know, it's significant and it meant something rather than them just passing on for no reason whatsoever. And I don't know. I think the storytelling in that game is exceptional, and the kind of the narrative's really good, and the different ways they approach every person. You know, loss of life was done really well. So I think Edith Finch is going to be three for me. But I mean, just this year so far, it's been, we say this at this point every year, I think, at the moment, just because of the caliber of games coming out. But for the last couple of years, it's been exceptional. And you wondered how last year was going to be top. Well, I think they've done it already. and like looking for the rest of the year after E3, though, I mean, there's a hell of a lot more coming out now between October and November. I don't know what state we're going to be in at, like, come December when we're doing the Game of the Year podcast. Because
we've not even had Gamescom yet. And, you know, that throws up some great new ones as well.
Yeah. I mean, do you think we're going to get more surprises this year? Because, like, Sony-wise, I can't see anything happening there. I think they're just going to focus on what was announced. Well, what was kind of trailered and showcased at E3, and then maybe next year there'll be a few more because they've got a hell of a lot to work on. I mean, not a lot of them were kind of third party as well, but there's they've still got a few kind of tricks up the sleeve. But I don't know what else could possibly get announced to come out this year.
I'm just not ruling anything out after the year we've already. The first half of the year we've already had, so it's like, we'll see.
Yeah, and I think it's good to remain positive like that because we don't know. Like, I mean, for fans of Shadow of the Colossus who expected that, like, I didn't think they were going to remake it.
I thought at most they might have just done the PS2 classics or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I didn't know this year we were going to see new Micro Machines. Now that might not mean a lot to some people, but I'm sure Gary, you're a fan.
Yeah, I remember playing that back on the Mega Drive,
yeah, tournament edition. Oh,
so much fun on top that game. Notch.
Yeah, Dan, do you ever play Micro Machines?
No.
Oh, mate.
Does look cool though.
I think it looks pretty cool. It seems like they've gone back to the same kind of courses and stuff they did when back in the day. But yeah, just in general, it's been a great year so far, and hopefully it continues to be one of the best years. You know, with the current releases and the new releases coming out over the next few months, but. If you hang around, listeners, after this podcast, there's going to be a little interview we're going to tag onto it, which I did with Mark Flurry from Drawl, who worked on Thumper. Really cool talking to him. We talk about Thumper, obviously, and its release on the Switch, how it's impacted him. We talk about life as a dad and what it's like living in Seoul in Korea and the kind of South Korea gaming scene. So it's really, really nice little interview. But guys, thanks for joining me today.
No worries.
And you can follow us all on Twitter. Gary, you're Blue Fury 47.
Yep.
Dan's at Mabroski. I'm at First Avenger 83. You can follow God Is a Geek at God Is a Geek, and you can go to the website godisageek.com. Obviously, we are on Patreon, and we'd love your support there. We're putting new content out every week. You know, podcast early. Features early, all that kind of stuff, and you can back us for a little as a pound a month. We've got some pretty awesome stuff coming up, especially with the new releases. Hopefully I'll be able to talk about something next week on the pod, but until then, thank you very much, guys.
No worries.
And listeners, thank you very much. Take care. Bye bye. Hello and welcome to a special episode of God is a Geek's podcast. I'm joined by someone who has worked on one of the, well, many would say, including, you know, us, one of the best kind of rhythm games of recent years. Mark Flurry, the co-founder of Drawl and the programming designer on Thumper. How are you doing, mate?
I'm good. It's cool to be on the podcast. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's good we finally managed to get it sorted, what with kids and that.
Sure, yeah.
kind of, yeah. But, I just want to find out a bit more. So, I mean, we played Thumper quite a while ago now, but it's recently come out on Switch. So, I mean, how is that seeing Thumper on the new Nintendo console?
It's cool. On a personal level, it's cool. Like, it's kind of fun to have my game on a... or our game on a Nintendo platform, given that's kind of what I played, you know, when I was a kid. And then also just the fact that people kind of got excited about the game all over again, which I feel really lucky about, because, you know, I mean, we came out as a PSVR launch title and people got excited about that. And then I think to have a game that can work both on PSVR and the Nintendo Switch It's not like we planned that. It just kind of happened, and we had the opportunity to do both, and it's cool that it worked out.
Yeah, I mean, there's not many, I don't know if there are any games that have got that kind of, you know, broad range of what it appears on. So, I mean, it is a game that you can play in any way possible. You can play it on the train, you know, you can play it in with a PSVR headset on. I'm gutted because I haven't managed to play it on PSVR yet. But when I got it, it was on PS4, and it just everything about it just kind of blew me away. And I'm really intrigued to find out how that idea comes into your head for this kind of game, because it's just so unique and different. So, I mean, first off, where did kind of you and Brian meet, and how did this, you know, how was the inception for this idea born?
Yeah, so I started working at Harmonix in Boston, the company that's responsible for Rock Band, Guitar Hero. So I started working there back in 2005. It was like my first game job, and Brian was also working there. He started even before I did. But we sort of met there, and Brian had a game, like he had an idea that he called Thumper, which was like a really simple rhythm game where you're like a little dude moving along like a track, or it was actually like a grid back then. And he actually pitched it as like an internal project at Harmonix, and it was rejected. And it was never prototyped, and no one at Harmonix ever worked on the idea.
Yeah.
And he kind of just kept stewing on it, and he tried to find a programmer, and I think maybe it didn't work out the first time. And then eventually we just started talking about it, and I had a lot of respect for Brian as an artist and as a musician. And even though I wasn't like totally sold on what the concept of Thumper was, like I didn't really see why it would be fun, because it was just such as like, you know, it was sort of just like removing complexity from rhythm games, and I wasn't convinced that it would be fun, but I did want to work with him, and I did want to explore it a little bit at least. And then of course it turned into this crazy like 7-year project, and we quit our jobs to finish it. And and I think that, you know, what the cool things about it just came out of, I guess, never giving up and sort of just perseverance and believing that there was, you know, there's a lot of different forms of music and ways to experience music that games haven't explored. And we felt that if we could just find a little bit of that, then maybe the game would turn out to be pretty interesting.
I mean, I've listened to some of Brian's stuff from when like Thumper came out, and his music is very, like with Lightning Bolt, it's very experimental in a really great way. And you can kind of see where some of the Thumper's music, where those influences lie and stuff. And the music is very kind of industrial, very heavy, and kind of aggressive. And that kind of, I want to know why the rhythm violence game, what does that mean to you? Because, I mean, it does feel very, very kind of violent, not in a physical way, but the music feels very just chaotic. So I mean, what was that an intentional kind of decision to make, or did that just kind of, did it just progress to that kind of style?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was intentional, but all these decisions happen kind of like gradually as a result of a lot of different experiments over many years. I think, you know, one of the things that was always kind of clear was the dark visual aesthetic. And we like knew that Brian had like a clear kind of artistic vision for how he wanted things to look. I mean, obviously we did a lot of experimentation, but it was always kind of going to have that vibe to it. And then I think as we progressed, like, you know, we were making this rhythm game, and we found that, like, you know, the faster it goes and the more like intense and physical it goes, like the kind of more fun it is. And we felt that the, you know, this is like the term that you've probably heard, like game feel, right? Like the feeling of like being like an embodied avatar or having some interaction with like a space in a game. We felt like that was something that other rhythm games really didn't even try to do, right? And we wanted to like try to push that really far. And so that's where like the kind of intense violence came from. And then the music, I think, was just kind of, it evolved a lot, but I think that it was also designed to fit the gameplay. And, you know, once we kind of had all the elements in place and we tried to think about how to describe the game, that's when we came up with Rhythm Violence. But it was never like we never sat down and was like, we're going to make a rhythm violence game. Like, right. That was just sort of something we.
Yeah. The phrase just kind of got coined because that's how it is. And it is, it's like, I don't really know many games, many rhythm games like this. And it's, that's a great thing. You know, I mean, one of the games that I always thought of was Rez to a point, just because the environment that you're flying around, like you're flying down this track and you're kind of hitting the barriers or flying over those kind of rings that circulate around the track, and they all add to the beat and the music. Were there any kind of games before it that kind of you drew influence from, or was it just, it just kind of became something in its own kind of way, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Rez is an interesting example because that game certainly is like very, it's like audio, you know, both in terms of audio and visuals, innovative.
Yeah.
And a cool game, an interesting game. But we definitely kind of looked at it and we thought, well, this has a sort of certain type of psychedelic experience, right? It's really kind of trancey and kind of like about floating and feeling like kind of in the groove and overwhelmed in a certain way, and we wanted to instead make it more like a hard psychedelic experience where, like, you know, it's like a little terrifying and you feel like you're really, there's a sense of physicality to it. And so, you know, I think we're compared to Rez just because, like, the games both came out on PSVR at the same time, but I think the games are kind of trying to do different things, which is cool. So, I think we were just trying to do something new, I think.
I mean, I didn't play Rez. Well, I played the newer when it got re-released, but I remember playing it back all those years ago, and it just the kind of the way that when you shot something that would include, you know, that would incorporate into the music that you're experiencing. But I mean, Thumper is a very, very unique game, and the bosses, which I love that looming head, is just it. I mean, in my review, I think I compared it to like the horror genre in a way, because there's no specific narrative, there's no script, but there is a story to it, and there is like a horror element to it. I mean, was that intentional? Because I just, that's one of the things I kind of love about it, is that I've never played anything like it, and it does feel very scary, and I think the music incorporates into that, and the intensity incorporates into that. But do you see it as kind of like that, like it's the horror elements to it, or is that just me?
No, I mean, I certainly heard that, and you know, the design of that particular boss character, like the head that kind of becomes more and more disfigured as you play, that was very intentional. That was like the plan all along. That was one of the earliest decisions we made. I think it's like, you know, some people feel like it's like a horrifying experience. Some people find it exhilarating. You know, I think we tried to make it be kind of intense and maybe a little uncomfortable, but we didn't want to resort to like gore or like actual violence or anything like that. As you know, you've played the game.
No. And
I think it kind of all builds towards the end. I don't know if you've managed to beat the whole game, but the very end is you know, kind of a unique sequence, and I think we're really happy with like the last couple parts, like the last level, and it's and it's funny because, like, you know, I think maybe less than 5% of players get that far, because it's a pretty hard game, and we, it's not very I mean, it's not like a punishing game, but it's also unforgiving. And I think that, you know, when we thought, like, I guess just the way we think about what we were doing, and when we think about like the art and music we like, we just kind of know that, like, we were hoping that a few people would really like it, and we didn't really care if everybody liked it or not. So
you make what you want to make, and if you know, it's about, as long as you're happy with what you're making, then everything else is a bonus.
Sure.
But it, as you say, it is it is difficult, but then it does that thing with, it's got that addiction to it as well. Like you may find a part where you get stuck on, but you just don't stop, and it becomes set in like a trance or something, and you become in this zone, and yeah, you keep dying, but then you keep playing, and I think that's down to like the quick response with the load times, and just the design in general is just like, you know, it's fascinating and stuff. But you know, this has taken up, you know, 7 years of your life.
Yeah.
What do you envision for the future? Have you got, I'm not intending to reveal anything or anything like that, but like, are you taking a break now? Are you having like a bit of downtime after all this? Are you looking to the future, that kind of thing?
Well, I wish I was taking a break. I'm not quite there yet. Like we, you know, we really started like just doing, like we did like some, we added a new mode to the game. We did some updates, and we're going to have like another kind of maintenance update come out soon. But we did the Switch version, and I'm really, really close to finishing the Xbox version, and that'll come out soon. And we're going to maybe do one more Thumper port. We'll see. And then I think we're both like, you know, we've thought a lot about like doing like DLC or, you know, more Thumper, but I think there's no way we could do that and feel not totally burned out at this point. So we're going to try to do something completely different.
Yeah, completely.
And, you know, if in a few years, like, people actually still care about Thumper, then maybe we'll do more. I don't know.
Yeah. No, that's cool, man. What do you like to do? Like, do you play many games when you're not, you know, you're not designing or programming and stuff like that? Is there anything, like, in the last few years you've kind of really connected with that, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of taking your breath away.
I would love to play more games. It's been hard just actually with Thumper being the main reason why I haven't been able to play. And now I have a baby boy, a month old. But I guess, you know, the games I made an exception for, because I guess I just couldn't resist, was I played The Witness, the whole thing.
Yes.
And I played Zelda for the Switch. And there's, I don't know, I've got like a list of maybe 30 games that I hope to play someday soon. I really love all types of games. Like, I think I usually don't even play games like Thumper. I tend to play more contemplative, slow games. Like my friend Daniel Ben Mergui, I don't know if you know him, but he just released a game called Fidel, which I'm really excited to play. So,
Right. Okay. Yeah. What's that about?
Is that, it's,
I kind of feel like I've heard that.
Yeah, so he was making this really cool game called Storyteller, from what I saw, which was like this, where you would kind of arrange objects in like a comic style panel and like solve puzzles
based
on creating stories. But, and it was like such a, I guess it was such an intense and big project that he started making another game, which was called Ernesto, which was sort of like an abstracted RPG, like, you know, like desktop dungeons, like that type of.
Yes. Yeah.
So he was working on that, but then that was his side project. But then he made like another side project, which is based on that. And it's called Fidel. Where anyway, I haven't even played it yet, but the pitch is that it's like a roguelike puzzle game, where you learn a lot every time you. There's a lot to learn about how it works, and then the character is a little dog. I don't know. I'm excited about it. Because I just have a lot of respect for him as a designer, so I'm sure it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. So you mentioned fatherhood.
Yeah.
How's that treated you? Because like I know what it's like from I've got two girls, so I know, you know, I'm not necessarily making a game and trying to kind of support that as well. So how's that for you?
It's good. I mean, it's very, very fortunate that I finished my game before the baby dropped. But yeah, the baby's doing good, and I'm very happy about that. So I also feel very fortunate that I get to be like a stay-at-home dad, and my wife's on maternity leave.
Yeah.
We live in Korea, which is a lot. I'm American, but the kind of maternity benefits and stuff here are a lot more generous, and he has healthcare.
Yeah.
So. There's not much to worry about now that I know that he's alive and healthy. He's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's just like 9 months of like you just don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just like completely separate from it, and it's like when that moment hits, it's like, oh my god, now I'm a dad. I best crack on.
Yeah,
but yeah, but you mentioned career. Like, I'm really intrigued about the Indies meetup that you organise.
Oh yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because it sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, so I live in Seoul, which is like the biggest city in Korea, and I've been here for almost 6 years. Yeah. And it's funny, when I lived in Boston and I worked at a game company for 6 years, I wasn't really part of much of a community. Maybe I was just kind of like burned out about, you know, being around game developers all day. Yeah. So I didn't try to like hang out with them outside of work. But here I kind of sought out some people, and we like, along with a couple of friends, we like have a monthly meetup where like there's a good mix of like foreign people, Korean people, people just coming through town. Just kind of, we try to like...
Yeah.
Make it an interesting sort of artistic space, you know, where people feel comfortable showing what they're working on, and like it's like totally non-commercial. We don't, it's not about promoting yourself or anything. And
that's really cool.
And then we also have, there's also a big festival in Korea called Busan Indie Connect, which is in Busan, which is the second biggest city. And I help organize that, and that's been a blast. Like, we've done two of those, and we'll have the third one in September. And yeah. Anyone interested in games in Korea and Asia should check it out.
Yeah, I mean, what is like the games scene like in Korea and Seoul and like, because obviously we know what it's like in America and and England and stuff. What's kind of big there at the moment? Because I you never really hear about it. It's just quite interesting to see whether they, you know, because a lot of people in America, it's all. Feels like Call of Duty, and it's very much FIFA here.
Oh, right.
What's everyone playing in kind of like Seoul?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of the big popular games, well, I'm not super interested in them. There are a lot of like mobile games, like, what are they, like Clash of Clans, you know, that style of game, or action RPG for on your phone. Or, of course, esports are a big thing here, like League of Legends and Overwatch are probably the two big ones. And then there's some Korean, like, only online RPGs that have been like going on for decades or something. And and so like the indie scene here is definitely like, I would say it's more underground than it would be in most Western countries. But it's still like, there's still a lot of interesting stuff happening. And I think it's harder for developers here to like eke out a living because there's just not even a market, or there's not nearly as big a market in their own country. Right. Like, they, not only do they have to like make a good game, but they have to figure out how to market it outside of their country. You know, it's like pretty lucky if you, if you're from America or the United Kingdom or something, right? You've got like connections to, you, well, you're much more likely to have connections to like press and media and stuff. So
awesome.
I think that in Asia, like, maybe it's getting better, but I don't know, it's also maybe like a sign of how bad things could get for like the West, you know? Like, it sort of seems like all the big companies here have figured out how to completely dominate, you know, the mobile space and dominate the online gaming space. And with, you know, like, things are not getting easier for indie developers anywhere. So it's good to like kind of think about how it is, you know, across the world, and have developers from different countries meet each other and learn about like the problems we all face. So that's what we try to do with that festival I was talking about, Busan Indie Connect.
I was going to say, did you get a lot of people from around the world coming to the festival?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, last year we had like probably about 30 developer teams from foreign countries showing games, plus like about 70 Korean games. So yeah, we had people from all over the world, and we're trying to be very international. And it's pretty amazing because it's all, the whole festival is funded by the government because, you know, they're just like into making...
That's amazing.
You know, they're interested in supporting like small businesses and entrepreneurs, and that's what they consider indie developers to be. So, yeah, it's cool. Like, I hope it keeps going.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I mean, what we'll do is we'll pop the links to the festival and stuff in the on the website if you like, because I think it'd be cool to learn a bit more about.
Sure.
Thanks for joining me, mate. Anyway, because, you know, Thumper is one of those games that we've all played on the site, and throughout. From the very start, you know, when I reviewed it and Adam played it on VR and stuff, and then we've recently put out a feature from a guy called Nick on the site who played it on the Switch. Right. It's like, it's just kind of, as you say earlier, it's growing still, and it's it can find its feet on any console.
Yeah.
And it plays differently on all the consoles, but it's still this core game, and it's a real work of art, and I'm glad it came out, and I appreciate you've taken time out to just come and talk to me about it, Mark. So thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you for the kind words, and yeah, it's my pleasure.
Brilliant. Yeah, well, that's all, guys. Thank you for listening. You can check out all of our content from E3, which has just happened recently, on godsthegeek.com. But yeah, again, Mark, thank you very much.
Thanks.
And we'll speak to you soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.